This is your one-stop shop for all things deals, discounts and tips when it comes to buying, well, anything really. And on this week's episode, where do you get your financial advice? Reports suggest that around one-third of Gen Z follow finfluencers for this. That's right, finfluencers, financial influencers, not influencers from Finland. And that's financial influencers to you and me. But should they? We'll talk about that later. Plus, council tax is going up again. How well can they put out our bins? We've got all the info you need to prepare yourself for that. Plus, if you are listening to this on Saturday morning at 11 a.m, we might just charge you more for it. Surge pricing is in, it's everywhere, and it's sometimes in unexpected places. Welcome to False Economy.
Powered by Hot UK Deals, the UK's number one app for deals, discounts, and freebies.
I'm Vic Slayton, consumer champion, shopaholic and occasional comedian. And joining me once again, we have the magnificent Paul Watson. How are you?
Hello. Very good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Are you all ready for Easter? By the time people listen to this, it will have happened. Did you have a good Easter? Look into the future. Did you have a good Easter?
I like that. Are you ready for Easter? It suddenly made me wonder, like, what would that involve? As in, have we bought some Easter eggs for the kids? Yeah. And I think that pretty much covers being ready for Easter in my eyes. I don't understand. I'll put it out there. I don't really understand Easter very well. I don't know why it pops up from nowhere. I don't really understand all the days that are involved. Like, Saturday seems to be a normal day, Sunday isn't, Friday isn't, Monday isn't. But yeah, I'm as ready as I ever am.
So yeah, tomorrow is Good Friday. That's where we are in the timeline. And we have to eat fish, but I'm not sure why. My mum texts me every year on Good Friday, usually by the time I've had a burger or something, and she's like, oh, don't forget, you can only eat fish. Now, to be clear, she doesn't go to church. She's not interested in Christianity, but for some reason, this has really stuck with her.
But why?
I don't know.
But what's that even about? Because, you know, I get it's the crucifixion, but did that have anything to do with him on the cross? Like, I think the fish industry just got in on this.
We should probably, like, Google it rather than make it our listeners' problem. Mm. But yeah, while we ponder why you eat fish on Good Friday, Charlotte, how are you?
Very well. I know that the McDonald's fillet of fish exists for religious reasons.
Wow.
If you looked into the history. So it was a Catholic reach, because obviously they couldn't eat, apparently. It was fish on Fridays, but they wanted to not lose all of the religious customers, which is why the fillet of fish was introduced, which is my little fun fact. But other than that, yeah, I've had a lovely Easter. I've eaten loads of chocolate.
You are speculating that you've eaten loads of chocolate.
I'm planning to. I'm preparing. I've loosened all my trousers. All of the elastic has been removed.
Easter chocolate just tastes better than normal chocolate. I don't know why.
Yeah, it is. It's evil. There's something wrong with it. Because, like, you've seen the NHS. The NHS have specifically told us not to eat a whole Easter egg.
Oh, yeah, like NHS bosses, like,
it's
don't
really
eat it all
weird.
In one go. And I'm like, does it count if I melt it and eat it with a spoon?
No, yeah. Drink it. No. I mean, I don't understand why. But what I do understand is it is the only type of chocolate that I would eat a whole Easter egg in one go. I'm not proud. You feel dreadful after it, but I have done that. I will do that.
Easter eggs are getting smaller though, right? So by the time
they
look at them, like, the average bar of chocolate is about 30 grams. I don't think it's more than like a couple of bars of chocolate now for the average 99 pence Easter egg. So I think it's fine.
Yeah.
I've decided, you know what? There are worse things in the world going on. I don't know why they've chosen this year specifically to police our eating of Easter eggs.
I don't smoke anymore. This is my new vice.
I use sustainable straws when I can, so I feel like I'm allowed to eat Easter eggs. I don't know why those things are together, but I've just decided you do something good, you're allowed to do something bad. And plus, nothing is bad in moderation. What if that is the only thing you've got in the cupboard for dinner? Are you supposed to go hungry rather than eat your full Easter egg? How does it compare to eating a whole chocolate orange as well?
There's more chocolate in a chocolate orange, I think, than an Easter egg.
They certainly seem heavier. If I had to kill a man with an Easter egg or a chocolate orange, I'd choose the chocolate orange.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a cricket ball, that thing.
I'm not planning on killing a man or a woman, you know, let's be inclusive with a chocolate orange, but if I were...
Chocolate orange in a sock.
I'd feel comfortable going into that fight.
See, next week when I see the headline, the chocolate orange murders, who is behind these? I think I didn't hear anything.
It's pretty good, really, isn't it? Because then you could just melt it down and the murder weapon's gone.
Yeah. You could eat the murder weapon.
We're not planning on any murders, but we have heard that true life crime does very well as a podcast. So we're basically trying to just usher that in through the back door.
We can mark this one as a true crime podcast, right?
Is it true crime committing the crimes?
No, we're not.
That would be a new concept. That would be a very new concept for a podcast, that we speculate about how to murder someone and then murder them. That would be very new. It wouldn't have many series, I suspect.
We'd be hiding in plain sight. It's like that O.J. Simpson book, you know, I didn't, but if I did, this is how I would have done it.
What if I did it?
Anyway, shall I tell you what's criminal? Finfluencers.
It is basically criminal though, isn't it?
Well, it is technically illegal, because basically the way it works with things like TV and press, I am technically a consumer expert, but I'm not allowed to tell people which credit card to have or which car insurance policy to go for, because I am not a qualified, validated financial advisor. So I can certainly talk about my own experiences, but I shouldn't be telling people what they shouldn't be doing with their money. That's the law. But apparently, normal laws do not apply on TikTok, because a third of Gen Z now follow these finfluencers, and that is where they're getting all their insight into how to manage their money. But should it be regulated? Can it be regulated?
It depends the extent of what they're advising, I suppose. If they're saying this is the best credit card to get, go and get this credit card. Obviously, that is heavily against the law, kind of the financial conduct regulation stuff. But I don't know, them just saying shop around for your credit cards. Where's the line for someone like what sort of Martin Lewis and the like put out? You know, just saying, here are your options.
Is the difference knowledge, in a way?
Well, yeah, you should be qualified to make these decisions. It's like, it's the same thing as I was saying sort of last week about the drag queen saying, move your banking. The reason that people aren't allowed to give financial advice is we don't know everybody's individual circumstances. For some people, applying for a credit card is the last straw on their credit rating. Mm. That will mean they're not viable and can't get a mortgage. Because every time you try and fail a credit check, a mark goes on your file that makes your credit file even worse.
Oh, shit.
Oh, I didn't know that. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know. So sometimes anything you require a credit check for, it could be a mobile phone contract or Klarna. Mm. It'll either be a soft footprint or it'll be the other one. And the other one is on there forever. So in 3 years' time, if you've applied for a bank loan consolidating all of your debts because you're in trouble, your lender might look at that and go, you got yourself into financial difficulty a few years ago. We're not going to insure you for hundreds of thousands of pounds to buy this house.
Jeez.
So the implications are huge. Like, credit cards are very, very bad for your credit rating unless you are somebody who is able to pay them off in full every month. Or if you haven't got a credit rating, that is one of the ideas, that to build a credit profile. Because if you've got no proof of ever borrowing any money, that also goes against you sometimes with your credit check.
That's why I've got a credit card.
Yeah.
Because someone was like, I've never borrowed any money, never had any debt. And, you know,
so how can you prove that you can pay them off?
And someone was like, well, if down the line you want to buy a house, you're going to need to prove that you can borrow. And I'm like, isn't it better to prove that I haven't? But no. So I have a credit card solely for the purpose of being able to say, look, I can borrow money and give it back.
But, you know, even things like just getting a subscription to the Sunday Times, it just proves a payment goes out, you're able to make it each month. But this is why finfluencers shouldn't be allowed, because you, Charlotte, have just given your own opinion there.
Yeah.
You had to get a credit card. You said you don't. I know that you don't, because I know there are other ways around it. But what we are relying on is for people to listen, and that sparks off them doing their own due diligence and doing their own work on it. And a lot of people aren't. And I think that's the problem. And now what we've got is we've got the people that probably are most qualified, people like Martin Lewis or finance journalists that have been going for years. So their hypothesis for what will work is worth a lot more than a 21-year-old who's just, you know, read an article about it and gone, right, this is the secrets to the universe. Those people are rule followers, so they won't. Yeah. They're not going to stick their neck out. So the people that are willfully going against the rules, or they don't know about the rules because that's how not qualified to give financial advice they are.
Yeah.
It's a concern. It's a concern.
But is there like a qualification though? So someone like Martin Lewis, like, is there a thing that he has that is like a like certification that means he is able to give advice? Because obviously he's a million times better at it than these finfluencers. But like, is there actually like a solid legal thing that says this man can give advice, you can't?
You have to be certified as a financial advisor.
Yeah.
Ah, okay, that makes
and
sense.
And sort of regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority or something.
And so they are breaking a law then, these people doing it. Is there actually
depends
like...
depends whether they're saying, do this.
No.
And that's the point. It's like, if they say, this is the best option, they've got to be qualified to make that judgment.
Yeah. But as we've said before, any conversation about finances is good conversation, because the more you know, the less likely you are to fall into the financial pitfalls. But it'll be interesting to see if they try and bring regulation in there where there haven't been. Because as it is at the moment, if you use certain hashtags, it will put a little thing on your post just saying, basically, this constitutes financial advice, so make sure you do your research. But there are ways around it.
And then you're covered. So you are covered then legally.
Well, you're not covered, but TikTok are showing that they tried.
Ah, right. So
no one's covered.
The influencers aren't.
Yeah.
Right.
Covered.
Seems legit.
Okay. No, I wondered if that's like a get around for the influencers to be like, look, you know, here we've put basically in small print, don't listen to us. But everyone knows the entire purpose of their existence is to be listened to, right? So it's pretty ethically awful, but to be honest.
It may be like the ads, though, where they have to put hashtag. Well, they're supposed to make it clear that anything they're being paid to advertise, they're being paid to advertise. And then they get around that by writing hashtag ad in the tiniest text they can, surrounded by words that ad is in the middle of.
Jesus, right.
Right. So the next thing on our list, surge pricing. What's that about? Now, we talked about this, I think, just over Christmas, because the idea was that pints were going to cost more at times where it's busiest. Now, hospitality industry, they're trying their best to stay afloat. You sort of understand where they're coming from, but they are now applying this. The Two Swords Group, it has been suggested this week, who own Alton Towers, Madame Two Swords, Legoland, I think, is one of them.
Yeah, Merlin Entertainment owns, Two Swords, Legoland, Thorpe Park. That collection.
They are suggesting that they will be charging more on sunny days.
It's awful. To be fair, they are saying
that. Where do you start with that?
To a certain extent, they've said it will be cheaper on quieter times. But I don't know whether they mean, if we call it, you know, base level price now, we're looking at more expensive in peak and cheaper in quiet, or whether it's just going to be cheaper than peak in quiet.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. All the prices go up.
All the prices go up, and they go up even more on a nice day.
Because you were talking about that for LNER recently. Like, they're trying to do away with off-peak and super off-peak.
Yeah.
And you now get slots to travel in. So you choose, like, travel in this two-hour block versus, which is just completely against all the rules, all my understanding of travel. It can only make them money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's completely obtuse.
Yeah. This amount of surge pricing is just getting offensive. I mean, everyone's trying it now. I saw an article about, you know, Wendy's is looking at doing surge pricing, you know, in peak times as well on their food, and pubs are going to do it. And now, you know, you just, I mean, we talked the other day about taking your kids out of school during term time. I mean, the difference, if they surge everything, then yeah, pay the fine instead of paying the surge. Yeah.
The trouble is, like, we've just seen it. Uber has now rolled out Uber Priority. It's the same with Deliveroo. It's like, do you want to pay a couple of pounds extra so you're first in the queue? It's like, no, I want the queuing system to work. How did this work before?
Yeah.
Let's do it like that.
I want an equitable treatment.
And also, how does my priority sit against Charlotte's, like, five-star rider thing? So it used to be... Like,
right.
the better passengers get the better access to the rides. But if I pay my £2, can I be a three? Like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm going to roll out of the taxi. I'm taking the door with me.
But isn't it like weird little privilege? Mm. Like, it's like if you're privileged enough, you don't have to deal with any of this stuff, right? People who have little bit more money than people who have really no money. But the people who have loads of money don't do any of this stuff anyway. They're just like, you don't Uber, do they?
Well, they like, just park, if it's no parking, because they can afford the fine. And that's the thing. It's
That's like a whole other world, right? There's a whole other world of rich person who gets picked up from their house in a sort of limousine car and get driven around. But like, this is like privilege within a tiny little... Yeah, it's so grim. It's really...
Well, that's it. It's a, you know, if it's the decision of whether or not you're going to be able to take your kids to Legoland on the bank holiday weekend.
But there's something in... them trying to reduce the amount of people going at peak times because then they'll have to pay less staff. There's a lot of conversations being had behind closed doors, particularly in hospitality, I think, to keep things on the rails. And you've got to wonder, like, the parks are big enough to take the amount of traffic. And like, at what point does the slight extra, like 100 people paying slightly more, is that as much as 200 people paying the existing price? Like, it feels like it's not just financially led.
No. So what they've tested it at some locations before being like, yes, everything that we own is going to move to this model. And actually, I think they tested, there might have been Thorpe Park they tested it at, and it saw its highest satisfaction ratings from people last year.
Fewer queues, because if everyone goes at the same time and you're waiting, it used to be standard. I haven't been to a theme park in a long old time, but you were expecting to wait 2 hours. Like, you've got one day in a park and you're spending most of it standing and queuing. Yeah.
You'll experience 5 rides.
Yeah, I've not been to Legoland, but I've spoken to some veterans of campaigns in Legoland, like parents who come back hollowed out. And honestly, it sounds like, in a way, the thing they say most is just the queues. When you've got kids in the queue, it's not even just like being an adult in a queue. It is just like hellish, because you've got your misery at being in a queue doubled by the fact you have these like children who are even more unable to queue. So maybe in a way you are making the experience more palatable by doing
it. It runs a risk, though, I think, in a cost of living crisis to do this, because you could end up creating the reverse problem, which is that the quieter weekends then become the busy ones. Because nobody can afford to go on the bank holidays, on the peak times, on the sunniest days. Everyone can only afford to go when the weather's crap. And it means that those then become the busy times.
The weather thing's funny, though, because the weather in this country is almost always completely variable. So like, if I sat out this morning, it would be like the lowest possible. It's like hailing here. By the like mid-afternoon, it could be like quite bright and sunny. So what does it like literally as the weather changes, does the price change? That just seems
bored on a day, and you're like, oh, what should I? You don't live far away, and you think, we need something to do with the kids this weekend. And you wake up in the morning and it looks absolutely gorgeous outside, and you go, let's go to Legoland. I mean, I don't know who in their right mind would plan an impromptu trip with their kids.
Impromptu trip to Legoland. It's raining. Get to Legoland.
Oh, the sun's out. Pack your bags, kids. We're going to Legoland.
But it'll become the opposite, though, won't it? It'll be like, oh, it's pissing
with
rain.
We're going to Legoland.
Get to Legoland. Get in.
And last but certainly the least of my favourite topics, it's council tax.
Yeah.
It's happening again.
Takes such an interest in that. I'm really passionate about council tax.
Councils are sad at the moment. We got a sad letter through saying that it's something like £600 less money per head this year compared to last year, because the big government has not shared out the pot with the local government. So all the things they planned, they're like, we're still excited about them, but we can't afford them.
Yeah.
By the way, you need to pay more for these shoddy facilities that we cannot invest in.
You need to pay more to maintain what we've got. And we are, as a council, getting so little money for each of you now that it is untenable.
Yeah, I don't suppose there's no chance you take your bin to landfill yourself, could you?
Or the It's going that way. I think it's going that way.
Yeah. It's obscene.
It's got to be that Simpsons episode. You know, the Simpsons episode where Homer becomes sanitation commissioner and he says, like, why can't someone else do it? And then the garbage men start to do like all the little jobs around the house. And then he realizes he's spent like all the money for a decade in like a week or something. But I've never sympathised more than can't
That's
someone else.
That's my favourite campaign
day,
slogan.
You're just like, oh. Yeah, it's the best.
Can someone else do it?
I mean, that's a rule to live by. Delegate, delegate, delegate. But yes, it's gone up in a surprise to nobody. Council tax, gone up. A joy. So, like, obviously, there's a few things that make up your council tax. There's a the bulk of it, the big chunk, goes to the council. You then pay a little bit towards, or at least I do, adult social care comes out of my bill. Some goes to the police and crime commissioner, and some goes to the fire and rescue service. So I sort of see a breakdown of what those are and how much those have gone up.
And living in Hillsborough, the police presence is astonishing.
But do you pay more because you live in Hillsborough? So obviously you're like, that's football policing,
it's
right?
It's all Sheffield City Council, but I imagine that the police contribution for a town that has two football teams is probably higher than in some places because the amount of presence they have to put on for the matches. But that's gone up 5.5%, the contribution for police and crime. The contribution for fire and rescue has gone up 3%, and the contribution for the main council tax has gone up 3.4%. It's not ideal.
Who's getting it the worst? Make us feel better.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. So I had a look. So I was like, oh, how can I feel better about this? Who's paying the most? What's the most expensive place? And it is my home county of Rutland. They have been absolutely shafted. Absolutely shafted by it. It's hilarious that the council tax is so expensive for a county that is the tiniest and also has, like, pretty low crime. A Band H property in Rutland. I don't know what a Band H is. I should have looked this up. I don't really understand how they determine. I think it's probably size of property and how many people are living there and all these things and exactly where it is. A Band H property in Rutland is paying £5,087 a year.
Oh, that's huge.
I mean, they haven't even got a police officer, have they?
I mean, there's two, I think. They're two or three, and they post little updates on there. Honestly, it's a great Facebook page. They post little updates of where they've been, and it's full of emojis as well. And it's like they give you a rundown of their day. It's like, someone reported suspicious activity. We went and checked it out. Then we stopped for a coffee, and there's all these little cute emojis and things.
It's crime, like, would be very easy if someone did want to commit crime.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, crime in Rutland would be the easiest thing ever, wouldn't it? The police are just telling you where they are at any given time. It's like, we're just having our coffee over here.
If something bad happens, they borrow people from Leicester. You know, a Band D there. They've gone up 5% and they're paying £2,543 a year. I mean, to put it in perspective, compared to the Band H in Rutland, I'm paying basically a fifth of that. Wild.
Yeah.
I've never got with local elections. So, like, you vote in your council, but then obviously, like, you also have the political party that's running the country. So, like, how much does it really matter who the council are? I've never quite understood
that. I mean, they determine how that money is disseminated out and what it's spent. For the record, I have now looked up what a Band H property. So the council tax bands are based on value of property.
Right, okay. Right.
Apparently that was based on a market calculation done by the government in 1991.
All right, yeah.
So a Band
no
H.
No change since
no,
then.
No change. According to Rutland County Council, there are eight bands and it is based on the 1991 calculation. Band H, that is the most expensive property, and that is anything over 320,000.
Okay, so that's a lot of places.
So they're just gaming that, right? They've played that intentionally, right? So that that basically more and more people have to pay higher band tax every year. Mm.
But I'll tell you what, though, it's one place where Americans sort of have a bit of a better system to a degree. Obviously, they don't have a lovely health service like we do. But there's a notion of tax choice in the US where you actually get to choose where you want to allocate your taxes. So in areas where there's a nice school, they might want to invest in more school stuff and infrastructure to make sure their kids can get to school safely. Whereas if you're in an area that's not got a lot of schools, you can sort of opt to invest it in other things, which I like the idea of it, but the UK, we are apathetic people. And I think as much as we're all like, oh, it's really annoying that we don't get a say, I would argue that if we did get a say, the people that would have this say are far, far lower than the people with an entitlement to have it. It's like, we want the rights to do it, but we don't want to do it. It's like voting.
Oh, and it would it would be entirely spite motivated. Yeah. Like, if there's any way to use that extra spend to, like, slight someone.
I feel like we as a nation would go, okay, so we're not going to pay the council staff. They're not getting paid. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Your salary's getting halved. Politicians. You know, there'd be so much spite towards them. And I think people would underestimate the value of fire because you don't see big fires very often.
Yeah, when did I last get any value out of that fire service?
When was
Come
I last
on.
A fire?
You know, and I feel like we'd way underestimate that. We'd slash their funding.
You'd literally post a letter saying that you wanted to give them zero, and then you, as you got back, your house built fire. And
I feel like we'd way underestimate that.
Yeah. We're fundamentally a bit disengaged and a bit lazy. And I think it's really interesting, a general election's coming up, and this is the least I've heard from politicians in the run-up to a general election, and the least conversation I've seen in just that people are like, we're so sick of everyone. It's just like, can we start? Can we start again? On that happy note, it's time for the slow fire round.
I'm glad we're keeping this up.
Item number one, it's time to dabble in Scrabble. National Scrabble Day is next Saturday, but obviously you all knew that. What are your plans for National Scrabble Day? You also know that it's on the 13th of April to celebrate the birth of the inventor Alfred Mosher Butts. I don't need to tell you these things. He was born in 1899 and his name is Butts. Now, if you were buying a present for the inventor Alfred Mosher Butts for his birthday on the 13th of April, you'd need something really, really premium, wouldn't you? And what better than a fancy Scrabble set made of only the finest calf's leather that you can buy from posh shop Aspinall of London? How much are we looking at for that?
What's made of leather in that?
The Scrabble set, exquisitely handmade with a leather hand-bound playing board atop a dual full-grain leather tray in red, which is felt-lined and provides stowage for the 100 bridal-hide-backed letters. Four leather-bound letter racks, rules and letter drawstring bag. The tray is trimmed to the base with a non-slip suedette, making it perfect for any coffee table or bellend.
Yeah. So, I was half expecting you to say that, you know, the pieces themselves are sort of ivory topped at that point.
They might as well be. They might as well be. So, how much?
I do want to see it. I think I'd kind of fall in love with it.
Yeah, I'm intrigued
you
by it.
You don't, because it's so ugly.
Is it?
I've just skipped through to have a look. It's really ugly.
I can't wait to see it.
To help you understand... Yeah. I've sent you a picture to the WhatsApp group because not only is it expensive, it's also real ugly.
It's horrible. It's horrible. Like, to be fair, I think red leather is just one of the tackiest things to look
at. It's a bit 70s, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
I'm going to say £100.
This is going to sound crazy. I'm going to say £500. Just because even like a normal board game is like £35,
£40,
£50.
I'm like, how much would I pay? How much is Scrabble worth? And then I feel like it could be higher, but also I just...
Honestly, I still don't get it exactly why, but I think it's got to be at least £500.
Point Paul, this will set you back a absurd £1,595.
Sorry? What?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Over £1,000?
It's nearly £2,000.
So who on earth? There is not a single human being who's buying that?
Have you
that?
Bought this? Please write in.
My God.
So having just seen the last item and the cost of it and knowing what is coming next, I'm going to want to check my blood pressure. If I went to Amazon and bought the Kinetic Wellbeing Advanced RISP blood pressure monitor from Amazon, how much would it cost me? How much pressure am I under? How close to a stroke am I? How much would it cost to find out? Now, this item is clinically validated with BIHS and ESH in association with St. John's Ambulance, so it's completely legit. It is a universal wrist cuff with a size between 13.5 centimetres and 21.5 centimetres. So that's if your wrist is bigger or smaller than that,
you're going to die.
You're going to die. There's movement detection. Wow. There's irregular heartbeat detection. And it is used by the NHS. Now, I think they mean that to be good news. But as we know, some stuff in the NHS is old as balls because there's not enough investment into it. So make of that what you will when you decide how much it would cost. So, okay, how much for a blood pressure cuff?
The thing you're describing doesn't sound particularly like fancy.
No, it is a literal cuff. You put it on to check your blood pressure, then you take it off again, like you would get in the doctor's.
Yeah, I think this is pretty box standard. I'm going to say £20.
I'm going to say £40.
All right. Ooh. So it's actually coming in at a bargain, £24.95.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean,
no one's surprised by that.
I mean, I just thought it would be better. Like, I thought it would be more expensive, like in the kind of 38 to 50 range I was picturing. But looking back on some of the things that we've purchased on Amazon via this podcast.
Yeah, it's quite funny that this one might save your life, but it's 20 quid.
Yeah, check my health or be a witch to confirm.
Right.
It is 2-0 to Paul. So this is to stop Paul from getting a clean sheet, Charlotte. And it's time for another instalment of Charlotte loses her mind working out bulk buy prices.
No.
No. I hate, for the record, I hate bulk buy prices too.
I can't believe that someone has absolutely woken up and gone, let's ruin Charlotte's day.
Yes, because this week's episode, it's tea bags.
Oh, Christ. Okay.
Of course it's tea bags.
More specifically, the very 1980s brand of tea bag that is Tetley. Remember the Tetley tea folk? Tetley were everywhere. And now they've gone.
The Tetley tea man.
The Tetley tea folk. Charlotte, there were a whole posse of them. There was a team.
There was some sort of scandal, I reckon. Something unsavoury happened. They're
I feel like
there
wasn't a woman in the Tetley tea folk, so maybe that's why.
Yeah. No, and I think they were all white.
I'm pretty sure there was a woman.
I'm gonna Google the Tetley tea folk while you think about this maths problem.
What are they up to now?
Much in the rearview mirror with Clover, Kellogg's Star, and all of the Safeways. I want to know how much it would cost to buy 5,500 bags of Tetleys from the catering supplier Nisbets. Now, this would weigh in at 11 kilograms, which is more than a little dachshund or the average car tire.
That's a lot of tea.
That is so much tea. They are heavy bags.
Yeah.
So how much? 5,500 cups of tea.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Oh, I don't know.
5,500 bags. Okay, right. Okay. Right. So I'm thinking about this in the context. Okay, I've got a big box of Yorkshire tea in the kitchen that I think is a 240 bag box.
Yeah, and that was a good deal.
That was a good deal. Paul, what are you going with?
Okay, I'm going, and this is totally off top of my head, I'm going with £350.
Okay. £350 for 5,500 bags of Tetley.
Yeah, it sounds crazy when you say it.
I'm torn on the price per bag. Okay. So I'm sort of figuring out a few things. What's buying in bulk, you expect to pay less. So I'm thinking about that big pack of Yorkshire tea in terms of what I've paid per bag for that. At most, probably in a supermarket, you're paying like, I suppose if you get a good deal, like 30-odd p a bag.
That feels quite steep.
No, less than that. Yeah, maybe it's less than that. I've made a mistake in my calculation. Not 30p, 3p.
Better.
3p a bag. £200.
All right. Well, good news for someone. Who is it?
You're stalling for time. You've had so long to look at the answer and you're stalling.
Well, no, I closed the document because I'm on Charlotte's laptop and I didn't want her looking at the answers. So.
How did I look at the answer? I'm in a different room.
All right. So, Charlotte, you've been vindicated here because the actual answer is £189.95. So you came in pretty close.
Wow, that was a good shot.
So it was 2-1 on that round, but an absolute triumphant finish for Charlotte. I mean, what you've done here is not putting us off putting these categories in again.
I mean, I feel really stressed about this. Do you know what? We could have some fun with that. Like, you know, seeing how flustered we can make me.
Yeah, when I show Charlotte an 8-pack of toilet rolls, you see what happens to the blood pressure.
The number of people who've now sent me pictures of 8-packs of loo rolls, by the way, you all must be stopped.
That's not, you don't want that. You don't want that to be your thing.
I'm so annoyed.
Right. Well, I'm going to leave you to stew on that, Charlotte Redding, because we have reached the end of the podcast. As always, thank you, listeners, for listening. And thank you, Paul and Charlotte, for being such good sports. We are always keen to hear your top tips and deals. We'd love to see your pictures of 8-packs of toilet rolls. Don't listen to Charlotte. And you can visit the Hot UK Deals forum to find more fun stuff that you can buy that actually is worth your money, unlike the Aspinalls Scrabble set, which is an absolute bloody racket. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate and review it. And if you didn't enjoy it, you now have 30 days to return it for a full refund. How much money you get back depends on the surge price that you paid for it in the first place. Terms and conditions apply. Your statutory rights are not affected.